The following edition of Bridging the Gap was produced in the studios of Radio Free Palmer and is hosted by Paul Thomas. Enjoy.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the second in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining the issues that have divided us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas, and I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of these causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. With that, I want to introduce today's panel. Coming from the last time, we still have Pat Chesbrough.
Good afternoon.
Charles Hayes.
Good afternoon.
And joining us today, Rick Maestrom.
Hello.
Again, we are not concerned about the celebrated aspects of their past because we are here about ideas, not promoting the personalities of what they've done. Okay. I want to start off today with a disclosure that we're going to be talking about health care. Yesterday was a big day in the United States Senate because there was a lot of votes taking on health care issues, and we'll talk about that a little later. But first, I want to start out with a riddle, okay? So you think about this, and what I want you to do is to tell me what all the things that I am going to list here have in common, starting off with taxes, wages, profits, bank accounts, insurance premiums, rent, mortgages, deductibles, copays, debts, capital investments, loans, bonds, retirement benefits, visits from the tooth fairy, gift certificates, capital gains, earned income credit, fees, surcharges, health care accounts, permanent fund dividends. Okay, who's first?
Well, they're all economic issues.
They're not really issues as much as there's a noun that describes them. Someone else.
Finance.
They're all, Charles, I'm going to give you a chance.
Health, medicine.
They're money. They are all money. Taxes is money. Profits is money.
Don't be sophisticated.
Visits from the tooth fairy is money. Okay. So when we talk about taxes and insurance premiums, we are really talking about the same thing, right? Money. Do the two names, taxes and premiums, have different connotations or elicit different feelings about them from the citizenry, from the electorate? If I say taxes or if I say insurance premiums, does that elicit something of a feeling that is different?
I think they're ideologically loaded.
How so?
Well, I mean, taxes is something people don't like. Insurance premiums are usually thought to be too high. It just depends on the political persuasion, I guess.
Rick, you were about to say something.
Yeah, well, I think both tend to be negative in terms of how people react to it. Insurance premiums, I think people, whether it's medical or death premiums, I just had lunch today, and one of the people at lunch was talking about they needed a life insurance premium. That person was 75 years old and talked about how high it was, how expensive it was. And I think the same thing for taxes. Rarely do you hear people say, taxes are too low, I'd like to raise them a little bit. So both have a negative connotation. I kind of agree with Charles on that.
I agree with the negative connotation part of it, except I think taxes are much more, I think it's a much more emotional issue. It's because people don't know what taxes do. People think it goes into a black hole. Your insurance premium is about you. It's about something to do with you specifically. Many people, don't think that taxes have anything to do with them personally. It's the government's too big, it's wasteful, all those things that have become sort of the themes of whatever. They've they've made taxes to be a bad thing. But premiums, it's really about you. It might be your life insurance, but it's your life insurance, and somebody's going to get money from your premium, whether it's too high or not.
So you're paying premiums in hopes that maybe someday you'll need to file a claim. But whenever you're paying taxes, you're just seeing it going to people who are undeserving of the money that you're giving them.
I'd say so, and I think people believe that they could spend the money better than whoever else is spending it.
Okay, remember last time Pat mentioned about the way we phrase things like the Patriot Act, and I think you also mentioned Obamacare, that key words are used in a manner in which they can either deify or demonize things. Are taxes currently demonized in today's political nomenclature?
Absolutely, in my opinion. I think it's become, and I think Alaska is a great example of that. I think we have spent many years not paying very much tax to our state, and now, and many of us paid tax when we first came here, and now it's like, oh my gosh, we can't pay taxes. Well, you know, it's how we get the things we want in our community. It's how we take care of our children. It's how we have parks. It's how we take care of things. And I think it has been demonized.
Rick, taxes demonized?
Well, I think I'm going to kind of respond to what Pat said, and that is we've had taxes before, and I was here when we had a state tax a long time ago. But I'm not one who supports taxes now because I think we already have over-collected taxes in the state, and we have both earnings and reserves from taxes we've already collected from the oil industry. I'm ready to pay a state tax once we've used the taxes we've already collected. So in a sense, they are, I'm not sure demonized is the right word, but they are negatively perceived. But I listen to the arguments about people saying it's time to have a state tax. I'm willing to have a state tax. I'm willing to have it, is what individual letters to the editors are. But the issue shouldn't be who's willing to pay a state tax, but have we spent the tax money we've already collected, primarily from the oil industry, as well as earnings from that tax money we've collected, before we start collecting a new tax? Because we have some $60, $70 billion in different reserves, and we're probably the richest secondary government in the history of America. I don't think any state is even close to having the kind of money we have in the bank. Now, we don't have access to all of it.
Because it's all tied up in the permanent fund.
And yes, it is. And the body, the corpus of the permanent fund requires a vote. But there's at least three or four other reserves, including AHFC and Alaska Housing and the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which is small now, but the permanent fund earnings reserve, that are there. And that's taxes that have already been collected, even though not individually from us, they have been collected primarily from the oil industry. So I would support state taxes, but only after we've use the money we already have. I mean, governments collect taxes to provide the services, as Pat mentioned earlier, provide services that people need. But when you have taxes in the bank and you want to keep banking them, that's not exactly why taxes are collected. So I wouldn't support actually having a state income tax until we've spent the tax money we already have reserved in the bank.
What say you, Charles?
I think nationally, we don't pay enough taxes, which is evidenced by $3 trillion in infrastructure repairs that haven't been done, not going to be done, because we have empowered the people, the wealthiest people in the country, to skip the responsibility, essentially, in my view. In the state of Alaska, we haven't collected enough taxes from the oil industry, and I spent 40 years in the oil industry. So here's my two.
This past May, I was talking to a classmate about how Alaska had no state income taxes or no state sales tax, and how our annual deficit now is in the billions of dollars, our state deficit. And he said to me, he said, taxes are what keep a civilized society civilized.
Civilization is expensive.
I don't disagree with that. I think that does, and it keeps people participating in the government, caring about the government. Right now, because Alaskans don't pay taxes, we complain about the state budget for about three or four days, And then we forget about it because it's not coming out of our monthly mortgage payment or we don't pay on a regular basis. So that I think that's important. I disagree with Charles here. And when he says that we don't pay enough taxes in America, we're just empowering empowering wasn't the word you used, but the rich. And I smile every time I see this as the tax cut for the rich. Well, the fact is that only 53% of Americans pay taxes, and the upper 25% of Americans in terms of income pay about 68% of the taxes. So the every tax cut is going to benefit a little more than the upper half, the upper 53%, because they're the only ones who pay taxes.
And taxpayers subsidize Walmart employees with food stamps, too.
Go ahead, Pat.
I just want to go back to something you said earlier, because I think that we have to, if indeed we have enough money, and I'm not arguing that we don't have enough money, we are unwilling to spend it, in my opinion, on the things that we need to have. We are crippling our education system. We are crippling our universities. We are saying we don't have any money, we don't have any money, and I'm talking Alaska here. So we are not doing the things for our children that we should be doing. You know, once you're in first grade, you only get one shot at first grade. So if you have 30 kids in that class because we don't have enough money, that's a huge deal. I mean, that's 1/13th of your education is gone. And I just feel like, okay, if we've got the money, let's decide to spend it. Let us say, let's be responsible about it. What do we have to pay for? Let's pay for the things we want to pay for. But this, we can't do it both ways. We can't say we have enough money and we're not going to tax anybody, or we're just going to cut until we have nothing left that anybody wants to have in our state.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF. 89.5 is the frequency out of Sutton, 89.7 in Palmer, Wasilla, and the Butte, 91.5 out in Glacier View. Radio Free Palmer's offering of Alaskans discussing issues that separate us politically with the hope of creating bridges across that divide. Rick, you want to respond to what Pat just said?
Yeah, I would like to. First of all, I was sad to see the university system being cut, because I'm a great supporter of that. Also, I've been a volunteer for 20 years in the school district when my kids were younger and growing up. But two things that are important. One is U.S. News and World Report just last 2016 did a Best Jobs in America, and they had public education jobs. They basically said in this article that the highest paid public school system in the nation is Nassau County, New York. The second highest paid is Anchorage, Alaska. The third highest paid is Fairbanks, Alaska. Now, I don't really buy into the we're cutting so much. And I had one lady tell me that people are moving out of jobs here. They're leaving because they can make more money. But according to that particular article, you know, they can't. And they listed all the different systems. And they're not moving out because there's no place
they can
get more.
Well, they certainly didn't take into consideration the cost of living and housing in Fairbanks and
Anchorage. No, they didn't. It's more expensive. There's no doubt about that.
So that could be the motivation.
And I agree with that. And I think I was happy to see that we're among the highest paid. We should be. And I like that. But I don't think that, you know, when I started out in the assembly in 1978 in Anchorage, both the city budget and the school district budget were $120 million. Now, under the same tax cap, the same regime, the same population increase and decrease, the city budget's up to $470 million, and the school district is just shy of $1 billion, $890 million. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but it's not that they've been cut. It's not, you know, every year you hear they're going to be cut and there'll be layoffs, but every year it goes up about 30-40% faster than the city budget does for the same population. And there's a lot of complicated reasons.
You're right.
That,
you're basically talking about money, but not necessarily positions that are taking care of things mm-hmm. that are needed in the school system. Teachers aides, janitorial work, et cetera. Charles, you look mad over there. Tell me what's going on.
When I started to work a half century ago, corporations paid about 1/3 of the taxes. Today it's less than 10%, and 1 in 4 pay nothing. In those days, the tax rate was somewhere around 90%, and that's too high, but it afforded a very wealthy lifestyle for individuals. To me, the fact complaining about that our tax is too high right now is absurd under the conditions of our military-industrial complex is set on automatic. We're still purchasing it in surplus in bayonets and all kinds of things like that and have been for years, and there's no way to stop it.
Okay, back to healthcare, if we could. The ranking of national health systems by the World Health Organization has the USA listed at number 37 between Costa Rica and Slovenia. There are a lot of European nations that rank high in that listing, and a whole lot of African nations at the very bottom. Russia was 130 out of 190. Do you think, and I know we've all been paying attention, do you think that the repeal and replace offering of the Republicans, now they're submitting in the U.S. Senate or and in the House, will have any effect on that ranking of 37? If it is passed. Do you understand the question?
Well, if it's passed, I think it will lower us considerably in the ranking.
Why do you say that?
Because I believe that fewer people will be able to access health care at all. It seems like it's a messed up system. They're not really proposing to change the basic, in my opinion, flaws in the system. They're just saying, let's just not do this part anymore. But the flaws in the system remain. I'm not saying the Affordable Care Act has addressed all the flaws.
Can you give me some details of those flaws?
I was trying to think about this, and I'm not that erudite, I guess I'd say, about healthcare, but it seems like we have competing systems here. We have some single-payer systems. We have Medicare, Medicaid, and we have the VA system. We have the Alaska Native Health System. Those are really kind of single-payer. Then we have the employer-based ones. And I was looking that up just before I came. And during World War II, because of federal wage constrictions, and because they didn't have very many people to work for them in these big industries, they decided they would start offering some other benefits. And the health benefits and those kinds of things were not included in the wage restrictions. So that's how that all started. And then people got to like it. And so anyways, we got the employer-based kind of system. And then we have the person, everybody, you know, I'm going to pay for my own system because I don't work for somebody that pays, blah, blah, blah. So we have these competing systems, and everybody sort of wants to have something. Well, everybody wants to have, I believe everybody wants to have health care, but it doesn't fit together in a way that makes sense and makes a smooth operation, in my opinion.
So you mentioned the VA, the Medicare, the Medicaid, Native, all government funded?
All government. Yeah, single-payer type things.
So single-payer paid by the government. Yeah. They are coming out of taxes. There's basically the premiums that are going into this are taxes, and then coming out are the claims, which is the taxes going back to the health care providers.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
What do you think about that, Rick?
Well, I've got to say, I've got to do a disclosure. I have insurance from the state of Alaska, the PERS, and it covers everything, and it's wonderful. You know, I'm really completely covered. I'm on Medicare now, and what Medicare doesn't cover, PERS covers. Now, it's also expensive, and everybody talks about how we're running out of money, we need to fund it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very expensive. It costs us a lot of money. But in terms of – and so I can't speak – specifically about whether or not the Republican plan would be better than the existing plan, because that doesn't impact me directly. I haven't buried myself in it. I haven't read either one of the two plans. But I think there's a major strategic political error by the Republicans in this, in that I've learned in my experience in public office that people of Alaska, and I expect people of America, don't buy into solutions until they fully understand the problem. And I don't think people fully understand the problem with Obamacare. There may be a lot of it, there may be a little of it, and a lot of people I know complain about different things about it, and it hurts the middle class. I have a son whose insurance premiums now are greater than his home cost, his mortgage cost. It's like having a second home that's bigger than his first home. And he's got a little baby, and he makes about $100,000 a year, but it's, you know, it's like two homes he's got, and after taxes. So I think the strategic
understanding
mistake
has been based on sloganeering.
Yeah, it
more
has.
Than
people,
anything else.
People don't really understand it. It's what they've read in the papers, and I know that if the Republican bill is passed, the media will largely spend the next couple of years just talking about all the negative things, as they have so far. They haven't mentioned anything positive, and I couldn't tell you positive things about it because I haven't spent a lot of time looking at it.
Could be there aren't any.
I know. I mean, it could be, but I don't know.
Charles? Yeah.
If the Republican bill passes, an awful lot of people will be hurt. The only upside I can see is a Democratic House in 2018. You can just about guarantee that, because the fear is going to spread all across the country. It's going to be the on the front page of every newspaper for ages with individual examples.
Which was your position last time?
Win the election. We're the only democratic developed nation in the world who can't seem to generate enough goodwill to look for all of our citizens. National defense, the first line of national defense is health, because if you don't have healthy people, you can't fight a war. So why we can't get our priorities straight about this, I just don't understand.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer. We're offering Alaskans discussing issues that separate us politically with the hope of creating bridges across that divide. Okay, let's talk about women and health care. Am I correct in stating that the Republican plans, one passed by the House and the ones that are currently coming out of the Senate now, reduces or eliminates coverage or increasing premium costs for such services as birth control, pregnancy, maternity care, childbirth? Does this current offering of the Republicans help reduce or increase those costs for women and their health care needs?
I guess I'd say the earlier ones certainly did. It left it up to people whether or not they were going to cover pregnancy or whether we're going to cover the costs related to going to having your services done at Planned Parenthood or those kinds of things. It's been historically that women have paid more and have had higher premiums and have less kinds of things. So I wouldn't think that that would be different. But, one of the deals I'd say is problem with this is that they haven't put it out for people to really be able to review. I mean, that was one of the things Lisa Murkowski said. I don't even know what it says. People don't know what it says. It's a complicated, complex issue. And this is not something that you just, it's hundreds of pages, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think Nancy Pelosi made it a special point in her great quote on Obamacare. She said, we need to pass it so we can find out what's in it. And I think that very few people read that also, and I think very few people have read this one. I haven't, and so
but
I can't.
Didn't the people have a better opportunity to read the Obamacare proposal, than the Affordable Care Act proposal, the bill itself before it was voted on, than the thing that is just showed up in the Senate
yesterday? I think they did. Yeah, I think they did have more opportunity to read it, and that's why I think the Republicans have moved too fast on this. They need to get the public to buy into the problems or understand the problems, if there are significant ones with Obamacare, and then correct it after the public understands it.
To me, believing that the Republicans are going to come up with something that is going to treat citizens better than their benefactors is laughably absurd.
Well, Charles,
okay, now I think
we
that's
know
a great,
where you're coming from.
That's a great example of the gap between, you know, the negative, his negative comments about Republican as Republicans are exactly the problem that we have in this country, is that people don't take the time to try to understand things from the other perspective. So I think that's a great illustration, Charles.
I spent a lot of time trying to understand it.
So one of the things when I was looking up information about today, just briefly, it seems that Truman tried to have insurance for all, like universal coverage back then. And people, because people had become a little bit used to now this, what happened during the war of having the employers, you know, pay, the people kind of liked that, so they really didn't fight very hard for that. Nixon, when he was there, he wanted a mandate. He wanted changing insurance, but he wanted a mandate that everybody had to be part of it. So that was kind of interesting. Of course, when he went down in flames, so did his ideas. So, you know, it's really very interesting. There's been a very long history of grappling with this issue, and we have not been successful yet. It seems like we might want to look at the other countries that actually do universal single payer, and they're more successful. And I was the other thing, and I'm going to let you talk in just a minute. The other thing that I was looking at is this place in Danville, Pennsylvania.
Connecticut?
They have a Geisinger. Oh, no, Danville, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it's the Geisinger Foundation that's modeled after the Mayo Clinic. And they give a certain number of dollars per, like if you're a doctor and you have 100 patients, you get $10,000 per patient, that's your pay. And then you serve them. That's what happens. Mm. And it costs you more than $10,000 for some and less. Anyways, it's an interesting concept that they're doing in that little place in Pennsylvania. The way the doctors are compensated so that you don't have to do all the other stuff.
Well, in 1946... after England was devastated by World War II, the Parliament decided to institute a national health system there. And they've had government-supported health care since then, right. Gone through some bumps, but that's something that they seem to
there
be pretty
enough,
happy with.
There was enough goodwill in this country after the end of World War II to put health care over. Southerners in the South killed it because they were afraid black people were going to use the same doctors and hospitals.
And they didn't want that kind of integration at that time.
That is
okay,
a fact.
What are your feelings about the Republican orthodoxy? And I'm using that word, orthodoxy, because it's something that we've maybe have experienced in the way things have been described by Republicans. The Republican orthodoxy in regard to women, couples, and controlling their own decisions with reproduction and the offspring, the family planning. Let's talk about that a little bit. Do the Republicans have something against the women and the couples making their own decisions about getting pregnant, having kids, that kind of thing?
Well,
let's go to Rick first.
Okay. A couple of things. I used to date a Democrat, and she always talked about the Republican war on women. I've never heard a Republican talk about that. I've never heard a Republican in my group, and it's not all across America, but I've never heard that from any person that they don't like women and they want to do it. But what I do hear is their support or their opposition to abortion. Now the Democrats can call it, the reproductive rights, and those reproductive rights are to have an abortion. And as you ask people, at what point in time do you not want to have an abortion? That's when there's a division. 8 months, 7 months, 6 months, 5 months. So I don't think there's any this war on women or this being against women. It's just not true. I hear it from Democrats about Republicans. I have never, ever heard
from
Republicans.
Let's talk about birth control then.
Okay.
We're familiar with the hobby horse case, where the hobby horse said that their employees were not entitled to birth control in their insurance because birth control was something that they were religiously opposed to. So that was kind of like a Republican position, or are you saying that's not a Republican position?
I, as a Republican, I didn't support that. I thought, you know, that's not the company's business, whether they do that. The company's business is to have their employees follow the laws, and if the laws allow that, then they can do that. Or they can, maybe they could, they're a privately owned company, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I guess they could choose who they want to employ based on whatever criteria that the Constitution allows. But I wasn't particularly supportive of that.
Okay.
Well, going back to the abortion issue, one of the things that Roe v. Wade didn't think up abortions. Abortions have been happening during the whole whatever, all human relations. Okay, so we can either have people have something done legally, women, or we can have them die in back alley things. You know, I mean, who said, I think it was Clinton said, you know, I would like to have them rare but safe. I mean, that's like any kind of thing. It's like, it's not, nobody, I can't imagine having to make that kind of choice to choose to have an abortion, whether my child was really significantly was going to die a terrible death, or I'd been raped, or, you know, I can't imagine having, fortunately, that kind of decision to have to make. So I think that we have to be careful that doesn't hinge on that, the health care of women. I think planning pregnancies, planning when you're going to have children, it only makes sense. You know, when you have people can't afford to have 12 children anymore. I mean, your son, I don't know whether his wife works too, but everybody seems to have to work. You know, when people had 12 children, they had farms. They needed the children to work on the farms, whatever. I believe that it's really important to think about it. Now, war on women, I don't know. But I hear more public people, men, especially Republican men, defaming women and women's rights than I do in any other circumstance. Now, that's not fair. It's not fair to all Republicans. But I think that the examples that you could cite, and I can't cite one right now, are a lot of Republican men say the things that are like that.
If men got pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Well, I disagree with that.
There is a deeply misogynistic ideology in patriarchal society. The Republicans don't know it because they're not aware of it, because it's just there. It's part of it. It's like the air that they breathe.
Well, we breathe the same air, or don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, a couple of things here. You know, I have not heard that, Pat, the comments among the Republicans. I recognize that the Republican people I associate with, and I'm a Republican, and I think most of are maybe they're different from some of the rest of the Republicans in different parts of the country. I don't know that, but I haven't seen the misogyny at all. And maybe it's subtle, as Charles says, and people don't even know they're misogynistic. But I just haven't got that sense at all. And I think that if we could talk, you know, if people could talk more about the specific issues and not how the groups of people may react to that, I think that's a positive thing in terms of bridging the gap. And I think we're all touching on those things, and we've all slipped away from it a little bit, maybe me too, in talking about. But I think that the issues are so important. And we're talking about how we have such a divide today. But I remember back in 1964. I started dating a girl at the University of Colorado, and she was older than me, and she was very smart. She was working on her PhD in astrogeophysics, very smart. And then she called, the first time I'd ever heard it, she said the abortion issue was like the dialogue of the deaf, like the dialogue of the deaf. People talk about it, but the other people don't hear it. And so I think there was that division even then. And of course, there was a division about Vietnam and the war in the 60s that followed. But this division on abortion and maybe women's rights is not new. I think we've always had that.
Racial bias and misogyny are an unconscious phenomenon. Because you don't think you have either one doesn't mean you don't have them. I mean, we're not that in touch with our subconscious, but they come out statistically. Statistically, it's a slam dunk that these things do exist.
Well, we certainly can see it. This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer, and we are Alaskans discussing issues that separate us politically with the hope of creating bridges across that divide. You have anything more to say about that particular issue, Pat?
I'm trying to figure out how we can have that conversation about people being able to, I mean, I think some people believe that people have abortions as a form of birth control. I suspect that is, maybe that happens, but I would suspect that is very unlikely. I can't imagine that someone would choose that, that kind of approach.
Whereas if they had better access to birth control,
perhaps,
it would not even be an issue. The abortion
perhaps
would not even come into that.
Or better education or whatever. But anyway, it's a difficult one. I know it's a really difficult issue, and I think we have to get beyond it.
But I think there was something that came out today that was pretty important. Is what I discussed earlier, the orthodoxy of the Republicans. Charles seems to believe that this is what the Republicans pretty much all believe, and you Rick, are denying that because your people you hang out with that are Republicans don't feel that way at all. So I think it's important that we understand that there are different perspectives that we're coming from and that we can't allow the label Democrat or Republican to freeze us into becoming something that is more adamant about bridging the gap and trying to get along.
To me, the only real hope of bridging the gap is to find any issue that both conservatives and liberals care more about the solution than they do about whose ideology prevails.
Do you think there are such issues out
there?
Sure.
Well, sure.
Name
especially
one.
Local. I mean, if your conservatives and liberals go to the same school and you need have to make decisions about that, then you should really care about the solution. I mean, it's harder as we go nationally. I mean, we're not going to avid Trump supporters are not going to be persuaded, and people that despise Trump are not going to be persuaded with an argument. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
So you're suggesting that we try to find issues that we for certain can agree on our interest in
that
both sides.
That we want to solve worse than we want to win.
Okay.
I mean, I would if the Republicans could come up with a health plan that was absolutely better than the Affordable Care Act. I mean, really looked after the citizens in the country. I'm game.
Oh, me too. Me too. I think everybody is.
You're going to be surprised here, but I think what Charles said is very brilliant. He said when people are worried more about that they want to solve the problem more than they want to win, I think that's a real core issue. And I've always felt that if somebody And I've separated myself. I'm probably a moderate Republican. I separated myself from the Republican ideology a number of times, and I supported the LSG, lesbian, gay, bisexual issue that city along with Toni Knowles and Arlis Sterjuluski. And Arlis is now an independent, but she was a Republican. I'm a Republican. Tony's a Democrat. So I've separated myself from that a number of times, and I felt that anybody who absolutely believes everything the Democrats stand for, or everybody who absolutely believes everything the Republicans stand for, is not thinking for themselves. I mean, there's little bits of difference, and maybe you're predominantly Republican or predominantly Democrat, but you need to think and try to, as Charles says, solve the problem instead of winning the issue.
I used to be a hard right Republican, by the way.
So basically what you're saying is we've fallen into the ideological camps, and some people just can't get out of those camps, and so their thinking is totally dominated by that instead of really thinking what is in front of us, the reality that's posed. Okay, I have another question about the money aspect of health care. Is the assistance of free market or capitalism in our health care system the real reason for the failure of Obamacare and the Republican plan? You talked earlier, Pat, about the VA, Medicare, Medicaid, the natives, all government, which is probably a higher proportion of the employee a much higher proportion of the total than the employer-based contributions to the healthcare system, as well as those coming out of the exchanges that are bought individually. So is the need for, in this country, capitalism or free market taking the expense and making it greater than what it would be if they were, say, in one of those Scandinavian countries where everything is totally... Go ahead, Charles.
I can't see the capitalistic ethos prevailing in making healthcare better for people, because profit comes at the expense of medical treatment, period. Every industrialized country that has some kind of universal care does it cheaper with better quality than we've got. People talk about how we're going to be lined up and stuff. My God, we're already lined up in this country. You try to get an appointment with a specialist, and you might be 2 months out already in this country. So that argument doesn't cut any water with me.
Well, you talk about better care and cheaper, and I can't speak to whether it would be cheaper or not, but the better care, and I've heard so many stories about the northern borders of Minnesota and North Dakota and the number of the Canadians who have come over from Saskatchewan and come south because they wanted to get something done, and it was going to be 3 months before they could get a kidney transplant or before they could get examinations. And this is really what lawyers would call secondhand information, because that's just stories that I've heard. I've never gone up there and seen the number of license plates, and enough people have told me where there must be some truth
but
to
they
it. A lot
have
of Canadian
resulted.
License plates they've left there to get something done right away because they
but
can't
these,
get it
these
done.
These stories have resulted in a belief that you now have.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have. And I can say I don't know for sure if that's true, but I have heard it a lot.
And I've heard the other way, too. I've heard the other way. I don't know, you know, so in a capitalistic system where I can choose to buy a Chevy or a Ford or whatever, that's one thing. There's a free market. You know, I can maybe choose which, I can certainly choose which doctor I want, I guess, but I have a Medicare thing, and then you're a little bit more limited. But the reality is, when you're sick, you're going to go to the person that you know. You're not going to say, well, I'm sick today, and I think I'm going to try the guy down the road now. You really kind of end up in a system where you're kind of caught. And if you trust somebody, and that's part of the deal, you don't know what you'd have to pay if you went to the other person. You don't do that kind of cost comparison. So in that way, I think it doesn't work in the same way that it does if, you know, like I said, if I'm buying a car, I can go and check to see the prices and so on.
So you're saying you want to do your shopping for your healthcare provider. You want to be able to check around to see who you like better.
Well, I don't, though. I wouldn't. You know,
yeah,
I'm,
I think
I'm
that
not
point was
do it.
Is that people don't do that. And I think that's a really good point, is they don't do that. They go with somebody. So I think it's a good argument for people, you know, for maybe the capitalism doesn't work as well in the healthcare as it does in the automobile industry, for example. And I think that makes some sense. I can compare the insurance program I have with the state of Alaska. When I turned 66, I had to go over to Medicare. And I think you have, maybe there's some exemptions you don't, but you have to, or you have to pay it yourself. You have to go over to Medicare, so they paid 80% of it. But in terms of, and my service is still pretty good, but there's some requirements of it that are just burdensome to me. And that is, I have to see to get my diabetes. I've had diabetes for 54 years with no health problems. And I won't pitch my books here, but maybe I did. But I have that when I got onto Medicare, I get syringes and stuff, but the syringes are unusable for anybody who's going to use them for putting in, because the needles are recessed and they only fit in an insulin pump. So nobody can use them. They're different. And the people in the radio show can't see this, but here's what they look like. They look like this. And this is the syringe, and this is the tip, and so you can't use it. But the bureaucrat who set up the rules for Medicare thought, oh, man, somebody's going to steal those syringes off the people's porch, so you have to stay home and sign for it. You can't just get it. So I've got to wait for a half a day at home, and I'm working a half a day at home until UPS or FedEx shows up and I can sign for it. Otherwise, I don't get it. And then I have to see my doctor every 3 months, and she doesn't want to see me. I don't want to see her, but I've got to drive into town. I've got to see her. I've got to meet with her. And it's just, and
but
so it takes an extra.
Regulations
so that's a, yeah,
like that
that's
are
a little bit of a problem.
Are required by the insurance companies as well. Are they
Well, they weren't by mine, no. No. None of those were. They just sent me the supplies.
An interesting Medicare thing. Because I'm fortunate like you in that, well, I'm on Medicare, which cost me more than it cost me to be a retired educator. And my husband is PERS. So I was TRS. My husband was PERS. And now I'm Medicare. So now I have everything. Except my husband died in December. So he died in December. And I applied for Social Security, which I don't get because I have a pension. And now they've sent me a new Medicare card that's under his Social Security number. Now, do I understand why? I have no idea. I said, why? Because, you know, why? But so there's another rule that's kind of, what? Anyway.
Okay, we already have socialized government paid health insurance, which Pat alluded to earlier. Medicare, Medicaid, VA. There's also the Children's Health Program, CHIP, which Hillary worked on. What do we think is better? Now, I think, Rick, you already mentioned that you thought that your insurance was better before going on Medicare. Mm-hmm. And, Pat, you believe the same way?
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And it's a smaller government. You know, the state of Alaska is a government, but it's a smaller government than the national government. And the larger a government gets and the more distant it gets from the people, the harder it is to communicate and to make it work, because they've got a lot of issues they've got to deal with, and not just ours.
So you basically did have government-issued health care, only it was state government.
State government, yeah.
It was better than the federal government, is what you're saying. But it was still government.
It was.
Okay, now we talked earlier about the American medical insurance system based on two major categories, government-funded and employer-employee workplace-paid premiums. How big of a burden on American businesses is this requirement that their employees get medical insurance as part of the operating costs of the business? How big of a burden is that on these businesses?
It's a huge burden.
Yeah, I own a small company, about 400 apartment units around Alaska, and it's small by standards of employees or anything else, and it's a big cost for us. And in the short run, we have to pay that cost, but we only have 5 or 6 employees, full-time employees. We have to pay that cost. In the long run, the renters are paying that cost because, you know, ultimately the prices of all apartments are going up a little bit. They are paying it. But right now, it's a big burden on our relatively small company.
So wouldn't it be cheaper then on the businesses if we had nationalized health insurance where the premiums and taxes came out of the paychecks of everybody?
I think so.
Spread out. So what do you think about that, Rick?
I can think of a couple of examples that show that that doesn't work at all, usually not necessarily medical things. But I look at the flood insurance program the government stopped because people couldn't get flood insurance along the Mississippi River all the way down the Missouri Valley. And so the government stepped in and said, we've got to protect these. And I don't know if it was Republicans or Democrats who did it, but we've got to protect these people, help them get flood insurance. It is now so far into debt, and the homes have been rebuilt time after time after time. So my question is, can government do it? I think if they could do it efficiently, it would be better.
So this is that kind of like apples and oranges, though.
It is flood insurance and health care. We're talking about
the cost of the business. Go ahead.
Look at the administrative cost of Social Security, just a tiny, tiny bit, and they're pretty damn good at it.
Well, Social Security, if the Congress would have been subject to the same laws the rest of America was, they'd all have been arrested when they start using that. You just use that trust fund money to operate government.
Outright theft.
So I think that that's
outright theft. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, they used the trust fund money to operate government. Now it's way in debt.
And we have the example of other countries who do it successfully. We do have examples of people who are successfully doing this kind of thing. And apparently, according to this little thing that I was looking up in Danville, Pennsylvania, we have some examples in this country of people that are doing something a little bit different
that makes sense.
One of the things that the Affordable Care Act I thought was trying to do is incentivize groups of people to try something else, to see if something else would work. And I think that that would be one way we could try to move forward. What do we all agree about here? And do we agree that everybody should be taken care of? Because, you know, if you're not taken care of now, your thing's going to get worse and you're going to end up in the emergency room, which we all know is more expensive. So I think we have models. I would like to see us really go into some research on what would work and how could we then make it bigger. Why couldn't Alaska, because we don't have very many providers, why couldn't we partner with the state of Washington? And maybe we could have, maybe there would be more providers that way. What? Or maybe we want to do Wyoming, other small states. I don't know. But it seems like we could do some other things if we want to solve the problem.
We need both liberalism and conservatism. We need both. We need a good measure of both. If you go too far in either direction, you're going to get something you don't want. So if we could get to the point to where we wanted to solve the health care problem more than we care about who won, like I said earlier, we could do this.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer. We're having Alaskans talking about issues that separate us politically, and today we're talking about health care. And I just got a note from Mike that said the Anchorage and the school district are going to use clinics for service. Anybody know what he's talking about? Tell me.
I don't.
Go ahead, Pat.
I think of clinics for, I think, employees. They'll be running them. My son-in-law actually worked for a company that did that in Wisconsin. They had a clinic right there so that the employees, instead of getting external health care, they were given care there, primary care. They had their teeth and their eyes and their primary care. If they had to be referred to somebody who was a real professional, they did that. But they had the clinics right on site, and they found that that was a cheaper way to do it.
Now, was that just for the low-income people? Or
oh, no, that was everybody who worked for that company.
Which was the school district and
it was an employee, yeah. And Anchorage, they're doing it employees. It's not for the kids. It's for the employees.
Yeah, we've had Anchorage Neighborhood Health Centers, and they have worked pretty well. I visited them when I was mayor a number of times, and there's long lines. It takes people sometimes a half a day, but people are and the treatment was almost free. I mean, it was $5, $8, something like that. So
who covered those costs?
I think it was the State Department of Health and Human Services. I don't know for
Medicaid,
sure.
It's probably Medicaid, wasn't it? It could have been
Medicaid.
Okay, so the healthcare providers were reimbursed by Medicaid.
Yeah, they were getting paid by somebody.
Okay, any comment on Lisa Murkowski's recent votes? She had two votes yesterday. Both of them sided with the Democrats and went against the majority of the Republicans. Anybody want to comment on that?
I think she sided with the people.
Well, my feeling is, and I only know about the one vote where she voted against debating, bringing the bill up for debate. And I've always been one, and I supported, when I was mayor, debates that I thought were going to end up negative to my position. But I've always think that voting in favor of debating an issue is a healthy thing to do. So I would have rather see, I like Lisa a lot. I think she's doing a good job for Alaska. But I would have rather seen her vote yes to at least allow debate of the bill. But nevertheless, it passed with a deciding vote by Mike Pence. So it's going to be debated.
How about the second bill?
I don't know what that was. What was it?
Well, that was more or less the regurgitation of the House bill, which was taking the Medicaid away over 10 years and giving a big tax break to the wealthy class. That was pretty much that bill.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that, but again, I think that's a result of the bad, I think, Republican strategy of presenting this before they fully talked about all the problems they want to solve. And I think they should have talked about the problems in much greater detail.
And I believe it was called the reconciliation bill, which was reconciling with what the House had initially submitted.
Yeah, I haven't read that bill, so.
Okay. We have just a little bit more time, and I want to get away from healthcare because we've got such great minds in this room now. I want to briefly ask you, what can be done about North Korea? Any ideas on what can be done about North Korea?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think North Korea is, it's just so inhumane to the people of North Korea and to people who oppose the regime in North Korea. I don't think they're a threat to America. It takes more than being able to put an ICBM up in the air to do it, to arm it with nuclear warheads, to do all those kind of things. They're 30 years behind America. But they do have a huge line of armaments along the North Korea-South Korea border, and they could do great damage to Seoul. So I think somehow, I think Eun Young Kim has to be neutralized by America without killing the, you know, and I don't know how to do that, and I don't think Pat does either, but he's a terrible, terrible human being. He's like Pol Pot, or he's like Adolf Hitler, and the people that just, and they use the poverty of people to really enhance the ruling class and to live well and to build up more and more armament. So I don't know the full answer, but it's got to start with Eun Young Kim.
What do you think there, Charles? Can we do anything about that guy over there near North Korea?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew something to do. The only thing I can think is to try to bring the whole world together to confront him. I mean, not just us, or, you know, just as many countries as absolutely possible. That's the only thing I can think of, because it's a no-win situation.
I heard an expert talk on the radio the other day who was saying that maybe they don't have the weapons. Maybe they're just making it up, because he gave an example of some kind of a launch from a ship or something, and he said it was actually footage of something that we had done 10 years before. So he was saying, you know, don't necessarily trust they even have the stuff. But he's a very scary young man. And I think that if we could get the world to, maybe that's a way we could try to find a solution. But the problem is, any kind of sanctions you put on him are going to harm the people even more, yeah. People in North Korea even more. And that's the issue.
We've tried that with Cuba, embargoing Cuba and isolating Cuba, and it didn't hurt the leaders.
Thank you all for coming today. We really appreciate your being here, and we're going to continue this into the future. And thanks for your participation. This is Paul Thomas from Trapper Creek saying thank you, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Bridging the Gap, a production of Radio Free Palmer, hosted by Paul Thomas. For further information about Bridging the Gap, please contact manager@radiofreepalmer.org.